Losanna-Bewegung Deutschland. Koalition für Evangelisation.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry, I don't speak German, but this is amazing. You have a screen that translates. We don't have that in Poland yet. Or maybe we do, and I did in a boat. But I'm very excited. I'm very excited to be in a room full of my brothers and sisters from Germany who have a passion and a heart to share the gospel and to see the kingdom grow in this country and beyond. I'm so excited. I feel really blessed and privileged to be here with you all. As Evie said, I live in Poland, in Breslau or Wrocław, with my wife and two kids, and we love serving Jesus together and with this missionary movement, reaching young people all around the world. That's our heart, that's our passion. I was walking through beautiful Marburg this morning and just looking at the town, thinking about the history, observing how many university students there are walking around, and I was just praying for this town and for the nation of Germany, that this student generation would get to hear the name of Jesus. And then I saw that beautiful church over there near the castle, and I walked in, and it is, you know, that beautiful big space, and I just felt like, oh God, I hope that young people still come here looking and searching. And I imagined a gathering of young people in that place. And then I came here to meet my friends Roland, who we've known for many years. And he said, yes, actually, we do meet there and many young people for decades. And so it's amazing. That's so cool. And that is what excites me, to see the next generation finding Jesus, understanding Jesus in a way that makes sense to them. And they're experiencing God and experiencing his calling on their lives so that they could go out and reach their generation. And that's what we're praying for, that God would raise up a missionary movement in our time, in our churches, in our nations, to reach a generation that has walked away. Many who think that God is not for them. They think, oh, church, yeah, that's from the past. They don't want to know anymore. And we've not missed now for decades, right? We're in second, third, maybe fourth generation of people who think that church is irrelevant in general in society. And there's this huge need for us to go to them, for us to connect with people again. That's the heart of what we do. I want to talk about that right now and in the next session. And maybe the easiest way to start with is to show you the kind of people I'm talking about. We say in our mission that we reach the...
We use the AEW in your heart.
And we do kiss. They can do friends, then we can live.
That's it. Sorry, technology. It's not my computer.
I want to show you this video. It's interviews in Polish Woodstock. Nowadays, it's called Poland Rock. It's one of the largest festivals in Europe. We have around 700,000 to 800,000 young people coming to this festival every year. They come from Germany, from Poland, from all over Europe. And they go there just for a week for fun, music, drinking, drugs, freedom. And we go there with a team to meet them, to hang out with them, to talk, to hear them. And this interview was our team just going around asking, what do you believe in? And it's an opportunity to hear how young adults, young people feel today, what they think about when you ask the question of faith and belief.
So let's try that again here.
What do you believe in? God.
I believe in peace, and thus, like, we can hold your friends and we can live in peace. And I think this is the most safe to say in life, to have a person dot zero and DP.
I would like myself, my senior.
I'm ashamed of even Lord, side Christians. I think God is dead, to be honest. The Lord is dead, it's me. There's some people. If God really existed, it's like he will say what. Take two, come on.
No, maybe the pharma, that's cause energy. Like if you do something good to other persons, then something was happens to you.
I don't know if there is God, there is God. I don't say there is no God, but I don't know.
Every movie is God, everything is just curious, idol, everything is okay. Just
Are you talking about having find me yourself? Irene had energy in her voice.
The twist.
Because I also try to create this like air bill. Maybe I'm stupid. I'm all crazy and kind of in a combination.
I actually can't believe in anything if it's like you don't really want. It's hard for me to also believe in Saudi Arabia.
If I could believe, I think I would believe in the reincarnation.
People involved. All depend on it. Saudi beat tennis takes. It's like people.
I have not even guessed that. I believe that every person has a soul and every person has the good in them. And it's just a matter of how will they show it to the world.
God, for me, it is myself and other people surrounding me.
I am a witch and I believe in ghosts. Like I believe in every god that exists. I believe in Jesus. I believe in Jesus is a god. I believe in Buddha. I believe in Allah. Everything. I think they just exist. But if someone is an atheist, it's okay.
Like somehow I get power that is like above us. I don't know how you call it, but that's there's a clue. I mean,
that question is really important for us. I mean, us as a church in Europe, in Germany, all around the world. How can that generation, this generation, get to know? There are so many ideas, so many messages out there. How will they get a chance to hear in a way that makes sense to them? And I think there's an important one for us to ask, and it's an important one for us to carry in prayer. As we pray for this generation, God, how can they know? How could they see who you are? If they had the chance to encounter God, to know the love of Jesus demonstrated on the cross, it would transform them. But how can they have that chance to hear and to see it? Well, one day, we go to this festival every year. And one time when I was there with our team, I was looking at that crowd of people. I mean, tents as far as the eye can see, that massive multitude of young people in front of a stage. And I was just praying and saying, God, how can they know you? How can they hear? What chance do they have to know that you are here, that you're alive, that you made them, that you love them? And as I was praying that prayer, I felt like God gave me an idea. I felt like he said, why don't you go do a concert with your band in this festival? And I really liked that idea, but I tried explaining to God that it's very difficult to play with your band in a festival like that. You know, you have to be invited. And so I'm walking along and having this conversation with God, and I felt like he was telling me, you don't need permission to do a show in this festival. Just do a show. So I went back to our team. And I said, guys, I think we have to do a concert in this festival. And they said, how? I said, I don't know. Pick up the PA system. Let's walk into the crowd and do a concert. So we carried the PA system into the middle of that audience. And the security guards didn't notice. So we kept building up our PA and we connected a generator. And then we started playing our music. And in my band, we play a style of music called riot rock. And that doesn't really exist. You can't Google it. But we started doing our music and it starts like this. This isn't a concert. It's a protest. It's a protest against the lies that we've been told since the day that we were born. That we are here by accident. That life has no meaning. That you are all on your own and you have to figure out life for yourself. That you can be whoever you want to be, but nobody can ever really tell you who you are. That life is just to buy stuff, get old and die one day, and that's it, and you'll die alone. Those are the lies we're being told, and we're here to protest against those lies. Now, at this moment, all the crazy people in the festival are gathering around, they're going, yeah, it's a protest! So all the crazy people are gathering, and we're doing our music, and in between the songs, we're talking about loneliness, about broken hearts, about the search for meaning in life, about how we all want to do something meaningful, but we don't know how, we don't know where to look for it. And eventually, I'm pointing to where we find that hope, that we were not put here by accident, but that we were made by a loving God. And as I start to talk about God, I say, I know. When I start talking about God, you immediately start thinking, oh, he's one of those religious guys, or it's about politics. You know, in Poland, we had that really mixed up, and people start thinking that. And so I said, I'm not here to defend a religious institution or politics. I'm here to talk about a man called Jesus, who came and he lived on these dirty streets. He lived in our broken homes. He was one of us. And yet he died a horrible death so that he could defeat the death that is inside me and inside you. And he came back to life. And he's here right now. And he's not just for religious people, but he's for me and you. When I say that, the crowd has gone quiet. And I say, if you want to make peace with God, you feel like, I'm not religious, but you want to make peace with the one who made you, then I want to pray for you right now. And the next thing you know, you have arms shooting up all around the festival. People who would never walk into a church are saying, I want to make peace with God. And then we get to pray, and we spend hours praying with people and talking and saying, you know, what's going on in your life? That was on one year. We did this. The next year, we got a call from one of the organizers of one of the stages. And he said, we'd like to invite your band to play on our stage. And we were like, what? How, that's crazy. How is that possible? Why? And he said, well, last year I was walking through the festival and I saw an illegal concert happening. And these were his words. He said that there was a fire in the crowd. And I'd light that fire at our stage. Now, that is how he was Hare Krishna. And the stage had this theme of New Age and Hare Krishna movement. And he said, I want you to come play. So we went and we did our concert on that stage. We preached the gospel loud and clear the same way we had the year before. And we went and spent hours praying as people came forward to the stage to respond to say they wanted to know Jesus. The truth, I believe, is that the gospel is powerful today, even for a very secular culture. A culture that's forgotten God. A culture that often feels so apathetic to God, to the church. There's a spiritual hunger in this culture. So those are the two things I believe, that the gospel is powerful in secular culture and that there is a spiritual hunger in the secular culture. And I know I'm speaking to people who know that. You guys are doing this as well in Derby, many different ways, through different ways of connecting with people. And I want to just remember some of the things that drive our hearts and our passion to see this generation come to know him. And I want to turn to that text that we all know in John 4, when Jesus met a Samaritan woman. And I just want to remember together some of the things we see in Jesus, in our Lord, our Master, how he did it, how he connected with somebody who's far. So John 4, verse 7 onwards, when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, you are a Jew and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. And Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Sir, the woman said, you have nothing to draw with and the well's deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock? Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. And the woman said to him, sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water. And I want to just point out a few things that have for years now stayed in my heart from that story and been a driving force for the kind of work we do. The first one is the amount of barriers Jesus breaks down to get to this woman. Right, the geographical barrier of going to a town that Jewish people don't usually go to, meeting at a well where the women come and a rabbi shouldn't be there talking to the woman. The fact that he asks for a drink of water and he breaks down the barriers of racism to connect with a Samaritan. All these barriers we know about, he breaks them all down, but I have to remember that because the easiest thing for all of us to do is to keep connecting with those who are more similar to us and are already in our circle.
and are already in our proximity. And yet Jesus demonstrates over and over again in the Gospels how he keeps going to a new place and to a new person who doesn't have the chance to hear. He breaks down barriers. And the challenge for me is, what are the barriers I need to break down today? Who are the people that we need to go to who are not hearing the gospel? And I would just put a challenge in that. When we hear that story and this message that many of us have probably heard or thought about before, what jumps to our mind are the marginalized. And the marginalized of our cities need to hear the gospel. They need to be helped. They need to be cared for. But often the ones who are the least reached, who are not walking into the church, are those who don't have a material need, but have a deep spiritual need. And they're the Germans who have grown up in a secular university and context who think, oh, I'm a church, it's not for me. And often you guys might feel the same way we do in Poland, that it's that they're often the hardest to reach. They're the hardest to connect to. And so it's easier to not have to engage with that very secular culture. But they are the Samaritans or the Samaritan women in some way, because they're spiritually hungry and they don't know. The second thing about this is the way Jesus engages with her, because he could have been an impact evangelist. You might look at what the story I just showed and say, oh, it's impact evangelism. Well, Jesus could have walked up to the woman and said, hi, my name's Jesus. I'm the Messiah. Follow me. And maybe she would have followed him. But that's not what he does. He turns up at the well and breaks down the barriers and he asks her for water. And he gets her thinking. He provokes her in a creative way. And he talks kind of enigmatically, right? He says, if you knew who it was that's asking you for water, you would have asked me and I would have given you living water. And this whole conversation shows a very creative and provocative way that Jesus engages with the woman. And I think that is what this secular culture needs today. This culture needs to be provoked again. It needs to hear the message about Jesus in a creative way, in a way that will make people go, I've never really thought about God in that way. I don't usually like hearing about Christianity or about church, but you just made me think again. That's one of my favorite reactions when I'm going and doing what we do and I talk to people. I love it when they say, I've never really thought about that. Yes, we need to help them think again. So what can we do in our cities today that can be shocking and provocative and creative to catch the attention of a secular culture that thinks that God is not for them anymore? And the third and last thing I want to point out is that from that point, where the woman's going, what's going on? Who is this guy? What is he talking about? He then goes to her heart, because he recognizes that the last barrier she has is the barrier of pride. Because she says, you know, do you have a well like we do? You know, this is our well. Jacob built this well. She's got this pride. I have everything I need. I have the water. I have the well. It's the same reaction many in a secular culture today give us. I don't need your God. I'm all good. I'm okay. I have what I need. We have our material lives. I don't need this. And yet Jesus then goes straight to her heart and he says, you don't understand. What I'm offering you is something that nothing in this world can provide. It's there is a thirst in your soul that this well will never provide for. And that's what this generation needs to hear. There is a thirst, a spiritual thirst in your heart that only meeting God can provide for. So I believe we need a missionary movement today to break down the barriers to get to these guys, this generation. We need to be creative and provocative in the way we share the gospel. And we need to go to their hearts. What are their heartfelt needs? What are the questions they're asking? We need to hear that. And that's why we do a video like that. And I wanna go through a few thoughts related to how people are thinking today. And I'm not sure if I'm going to get
to make this work. Can I like click it along, Simon? Sorry, I lost the lamp of the basic click.
Oh, there it is. Great. I wanna go through with you guys what I call seven lies of secular culture. And I'll do it very briefly and then we'll stop for a break and a discussion around it. And this, there are many more ideas or lies in this culture for sure, but these are seven that help me summarize how I see a global youth culture. And we're talking about cities all over the world today. I'll tell you a little bit more about a missionary movement we're seeing. But wherever we go, I mean, we were in December, we were in Saudi Arabia. We were in a festival called Soundstorm. And the year before, it was the headliner was Eminem in Saudi Arabia. Can you imagine this? You know, you're in the desert in Saudi Arabia with thousands of young Muslims. Or background Muslims who often, when you're in a festival, you can't tell. You know, they're looking like any festival in any part of the world. And they're there enjoying the music for all over the world. And they're open and they're talking and they're asking very similar questions. Wherever we go, we hear similar questions, similar barriers to the gospel. Line number one, I can only be sure of what I see. And this is just the essence of materialism. It's just that feeling that nobody really knows the answers to the big questions. That maybe there are no answers. Maybe you can't know. You can know the material things. You can know what you see. You can know your career. But you can't know more than that. And that lie leads to a second lie that takes away our meaning and our purpose. I mean, you guys know this. This is secularism put in a different way. It's put in the questions we hear on the streets and in the festivals and in the universities and in the clubs and in the sports centers, right? It's these questions that people are asking. They're saying, do I have any meaning? Does my life have meaning, or am I here by accident? If nobody knows the answers, maybe I'm here by accident. Maybe I don't have a purpose. Line number three is how we deal with that. If nobody knows the answers, and maybe I'm here by accident, how do we live? How do we live a positive life today? While we tell ourselves another idea or another life, everything's going to be okay. Just live your life. Just enjoy your life. Find something fun to do. Find a hobby. Find a passion. Find something that interests you. And that's what we're searching for. We're looking for. But unfortunately, like the well for the Samaritan woman, it doesn't satisfy. And so we're always looking. And so we're always trying to fill ourselves. And then we get a generation covered in addiction, in mental health crisis, because they're looking for something and they don't know what it is. And they're trying to be okay. But when COVID hits or war starts or financial crisis or personal crisis hits, suddenly the ground beneath our feet is taken away and everything was not okay anymore. And what a lot of this generation is feeling is, I thought everything was okay, and it's not, and I don't have answers. I don't know how to respond. It affects our identities, and this is a big one, right? That's hit us over the last 15, 20 years, this big hit of identity, that it hits our sexuality and our way of connecting. We don't know anymore who we are, and we don't know how to find the answers. I can be whoever I want to be, and yet nobody tells me how to figure that out. And I get lost in my identity. It affects what we believe in. It affects the general worldview of our lives. We're told it doesn't matter what you believe. I was told this all the time in my university, 17, 18 years ago, that it doesn't matter what you believe. You know, I would share about my faith when I was in class, and they would say, oh, that's great that you believe that stuff, but don't talk about it here. It's not necessary. Doesn't help. So they get up in this environment where they think it doesn't really matter and you can believe whatever you want. That's why you get the girl in the video who says, I'm a witch, but I believe in all gods. I can believe in Allah or in God or anything. But if you're an atheist, it's okay. You know why? Because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just believe whatever you want. But it leaves us feeling broken. It leaves us feeling confused. Line number six affects our relationships. I don't know who I am, I don't know what to believe, and I don't know how to truly connect with people anymore. Because love, well, who knows what love is? Love is just a passing feeling. It's whatever you want it to be. It can be with whoever you want it to be. And so I live in this fluid life where I can never belong. I can never truly connect with anyone. And we're hit with a crisis of loneliness, which I'm often told by my friends in Germany is a big one, that loneliness, just hits this generation in such a way. Now, All of that would be completely different if there was a God. If God was alive and real, if it's true, if the gospel's true, then all of these ideas that are haunting our whole generation would be completely, that there'd be answered, there'd be a response to it if they could know who God is. But lie number seven often stops us from looking for him. It stops us from looking for God because we think to know God, you have to be religious. And that can mean a different thing in different countries, right? It can mean the state church in Germany. It can mean the Catholic Church in Poland. It can mean even Islam in Saudi Arabia. You know, it's like, oh, I don't really, maybe I'm even in Saudi Arabia. Tell us, like, oh, I don't really identify or connect with the whole religious thing my parents follow, but, you know, it's on my ID card. And so there's this feeling of disconnect from the religious institution, and but there's this idea that to know God, you're supposed to be religious. And so then they have this idea in their heads, like, maybe it's the Christians they've seen on social media, or it's the big church in the town, and they walked in and they just go, this is, it's not for me. I don't identify with it. And so because they feel like they don't identify with it, they think, oh, never mind. Just let's just not think about that. Let's get on with life. And it's a barrier. It's a barrier. So I'll go in, on the second session, I want to go into more about how more in depth we respond. But I want to just briefly at the end here point out how powerful the gospel responds to every single one of the ideas at the core of our session of society. Because number one, if there is a God, oh, and first let me just point out some of the heartfelt needs that come from that. And this for me is an important exercise, because if Jesus was connecting with the heart of the Samaritan woman and sets that example, how are we connecting with the heart of a generation today? Those lies leave us looking for meaning and not knowing where to find it, and looking for a need to belong somewhere and not knowing how. Not knowing how at all. And you might say, well, if people just aren't interested, it's not possible. But I'll repeat what I said at the beginning, that the gospel is powerful today to respond to those things, and people are spiritually hungry. And here's one truth. I mean, that we could give thousands of examples, but here's Bring Me the Horizon from Sheffield in the UK, an agnostic, atheistic, hardcore band who in their lyrics say, I have a hole in my soul growing deeper. The loneliness is haunting me. The weight of the world is getting harder to hold up. Who will fix me now? Save me from myself. Don't let me drown. For me, this is an example of the cry of this generation, the spiritual hunger of a generation saying, you know, the same culture that puts me at the center as the idol is saying, save me from myself. Somebody tell me what's true. Somebody help me. I'm drowning. I'm full of loneliness. I'm broken. I'm carrying a weight. I don't know where to find answers. Somebody tell me. I mean, there's so much hunger and passion in this, and it's all over. It's all over. And that's why I believe we need to go to them, because we recognize that there is an aspect of God in them. There is the image of God in this generation. And that's why there's that spiritual hunger there. So if there is a God, then I can be sure of so much more than the things that I see. And I've seen it. This generation is so hungry to know that there is more than this material world. And they need us to go and to show it, to connect with that idea. To say, yeah, there is more. There's so much more than this material world. To be able to go and say, you're not an accident, but you were made by a loving Father who knew you before you were born and who has a plan for your life and gives you purpose and meaning. That message connects with this generation. When they realize, okay, there is a way of finding meaning and purpose. If there is a God, then everything is not okay until I meet him. They need the gospel truth. The lies of this culture, they're looking for gospel truth that can give them straight and clear. Yes, it's true. Everything's not okay. That's true. It'll only be okay when you meet the one who made you. It's refreshing. It might be challenging, offensive, to many, but it's refreshing. It's what they're looking for. I go, nobody tells me this anymore. I need to know that things are not okay until I find him. If there is a God, then I don't have to figure out who I am all on my own. But I can be the man and woman that God made me to be. I can find true identity, maybe for the first time. I can start to discover who I truly am when I meet the one who made me. If there is a God, then it does matter what you believe. And we should be talking about it in the universities, in the public squares, in the gyms, in the everywhere. It should be talked about. It does matter. Now, if there is a God, then love is not just a passing feeling. But the love that the Bible describes is often exactly the love they're looking for. A sacrificial love that lays its life down for the other. That love that is long-lasting, that is eternal, that is not selfish, that is not self-centered. That love, the love that, that there is no greater love than he who gives his life for his friends. All of this, all these passages we know, Corinthians 13, of Jesus describing, is exactly the kind of love these guys are looking for, and they don't know. They don't know and they can't hear it unless we communicate it in a way they can understand. And finally, I need to be able to go to them and show them that they don't need to be religious in the way they're thinking to find God. They can find God at Polish Woodstock. And they can hear that, hey, God is for you too. You can make peace with God right here, right now. You can have an encounter. You can start to think and open yourself to something new. And that is a very important message for so many today. Because it might sound obvious to us. But for many of them, they just don't know or realize that knowing God is so much bigger than a particular church culture or denomination or building. They don't know. And so they'll only know if we can go to them and demonstrate that and show that. So maybe I'll leave it there for now. And in the next session, I want to go more into how we bridge that gap. Because I think one of the most important things for us to think about when we look at secular culture in our cities, or when we look at this young generation, this next generation that doesn't realize that God is there for them, that we need to go to them rather than wait for them to come to us. And going to them is what we're called to do since the beginning, since the New Testament, since the Great Commission. And we have centuries and decades of thinking about how to be missional, how to go to people, how to be missionaries. But have we really applied it enough in our second culture? If we understand the gap, the cultural gap that there is today in our own cities, have we made the same efforts that missionaries for centuries did in going to countries and learning languages and translating the Gospels and carrying their coffins on a ship to get there? Have we made the same efforts to reach our secular culture today? Do we have missionaries who have committed their lives to understanding the ideas of our culture, to go into the festivals and the universities and the places and being there, present and engaging in a relative, creative, provocative way and speaking to young people's hearts in a clear way? Have ye raised up a new missionary movement that can do that? And I think that there are many great examples, but that is one of my greatest prayers today. God, would you raise up a missionary movement that truly engages secular culture, that is bold, that is creative, and that is truly listening to the culture around it. So I'll leave it there for now, and Evie, I'll pass it right back to you.